We're talking about the art of neighboring. Loving the person next door as our neighbor, the person across the street. One of the hindrances to that for us, one of the things that makes that difficult for many of us, is that we're very busy, right? We're all busy. We talked about that last week. If we're going to truly obey the Lord in this regard, if we're going to make this a priority, we're going to have to make some hard decisions in our lives. We talked about that last week. But there's another hurdle we have to get over if we're going to do this, and that's fear. For many of us, it's a bit intimidating to consider reaching out to neighbors that we don't yet know. They may be different than you. They might have different values than you do. And we live in an era when there's suspicion and we're not sure if it's really wise to get to know people well. It's better to just kind of keep our distance and stay safe. So we need to overcome that. Love conquers fear. We need to ask God to give us his love for people that will conquer those fears. So what I want to do today is, just briefly, we're going to look at another incident in the life of Jesus to talk a little bit about removing this fear and looking past our fear to see people for who they are. And then I want to spend a few moments talking about some very specific ways that we can be a good neighbor, that we can love our neighbors. What does that actually look like? I want to talk briefly about that. So open your Bible, if you would. Turn on your device. I want you to follow along. There's not going to be a lot of scripture on the screens today. There are not going to be a lot of slides. So it's really important that you follow along with me. Luke chapter 7. And we're going to walk through this passage where Jesus is anointed in the home of Simon by a sinful woman. We'll begin in chapter 7 with verse 36. Luke 7:36. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. Just would comment, that was not unusual, not uncommon. Perhaps at the end of a message in the temple, not unlike people saying, let's go out for dinner. Hey, pastor, you want to come to our house? Similar kind of thing happened all the time. So this Pharisee invited Jesus to dinner. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. As you're probably aware, unlike our practice where we sit at a table, they tried to keep their feet as far away from the table as possible in that culture. A very wise thing to do in light of the culture, in light of their feet not being very clean. So they would actually recline with their feet away from the table, leaning toward the table. Now they're gathered there in his home in that fashion. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town, boy, that doesn't sound good, does it? How would you like to be known as the guy who lived a sinful life in that community? Some translations say she was notorious. She was well known as a sinner. You probably are aware, if you've read much in the Gospels, that this is kind of a sign, a signal that she was a prostitute. And she was well known in this community as being such. Well, she learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came. She brought an alabaster jar of perfume, a very expensive jar of perfume. And she stood behind him at his feet. You can visualize that, I think, as his feet are extending away from the table. So she's out away from the table, probably in the shadows. It might have been evening, we don't know. Maybe they didn't notice her when she first came in, but now as she's standing at his feet, she's seen by others. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Some more literal translations say she was actually raining tears upon his feet. And then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, so he's thinking this, he's observing and he's drawing some conclusions. If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. Jesus answered Simon, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two men owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii. A denarii was roughly a day's wages, so about a year and a half worth of pay. No small amount. And the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the biggest debt canceled." It's an obvious answer, right? I mean, it just seems obvious. That's why perhaps he said, "I suppose it's that one." "You've judged correctly," Jesus answered. Now notice what happens. "Then he," this is Jesus, "turned toward the woman." So he's turning toward the woman and he speaks to Simon. "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, which was customary. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss," again, part of the custom. "But this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she's poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus says to the woman, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." A very poignant scene. A very meaningful incident in the life of Jesus. So what are the takeaways for us? Well, there are many. Three people, really, in this scene. We have Jesus, the prophet. We have the Pharisee, and we have the prostitute. Jesus, as in all gospel accounts, is the centerpiece. He's the one who is at the center. And at first it would appear that the woman is at the center, right? She comes in and makes a scene. It would seem that she's the center of this scene, but really it's not her. It's the Pharisee. It's Simon. And it's his attitude and his response to this woman. That's at the heart of what we learn here. There's a lot to learn about God, about Jesus, about his grace, about forgiveness, about being saved by faith, all those things. But I want to talk about Simon's attitude. Simon's response to his dinner as this woman entered the room. If you would go back to verse 44, and I want to point out one thing that he said. After telling the story about the two debtors, he turned toward the woman and he said to Simon, "Do you see this woman?" Let's think about that for a few moments. Do you see this woman? Seems like a strange question. And in one sense, you would have to conclude that Simon probably saw a little else after she entered the room. I mean, she was like the elephant in the room. But on another level, I wonder if he actually ever really saw her. Did he see the woman herself? Or did he simply see her reputation? Did he see her as a very real human being, someone who is broken? Or did he simply see her sin? It would appear he never really saw her. He cared nothing about her, only about what her presence in his home might mean for him. And his attitude was very clear by what he thought about Jesus. Someone who is upright would never associate or allow themselves to be contaminated by someone like this. And that's what Jesus was concerned about. Now, many believe that the woman had encountered Jesus previously, had heard of his teaching, had already put her trust in him. And that's why she came, because she heard he was there. And that's why she's already weeping with this one overwhelming sense of gratitude and love for what he did, because he saw her for who she was. He saw her need. He saw her brokenness, and he extended his grace and love to her and forgiveness. And now she's come overwhelmed with that love. But Simon, he's socially, culturally, religiously acceptable. And he doesn't want to be contaminated. He doesn't want to be near someone like that. Obviously, the application for us is that we might be tempted to do something very similar. You know, we're good at saying, love the sinner, but hate the sin. That's a good principle. But sometimes it's hard to prevent ourselves and to keep ourselves from seeing people simply as sinners, rather than as real people who are broken, who need Jesus. And we're afraid we don't want to get too close. They might hurt us or our reputation. They might cause some difficulty in our lives. And so we simply keep them at arm's length. And we don't really know them as people. We only know them as sinners. As I said a few weeks ago, one of the monikers Jesus picked up, which was given to him disparagingly, is that he was a friend of sinners, unlike the religious crowd. So we have to ask ourselves, are we a friend to sinners? Do we see them? So I'm just going to pause here. I want to just stop here. And I don't want to go any further, really. I just simply want to say, let's put the bar really low as we begin to love our neighbors, as we begin to neighbor in the way Jesus would want us to. Let's just put the bar really low, and let's begin with this. Do you know your neighbor? Maybe the first thing is just to get to know them, to see them. So imagine this week, someday Jesus in person comes to your home, to your apartment, where you're living. And you stand with him near the picture window where you live, and you're looking out with him, and he sees a woman out across the way. She's mowing the grass. She's tending one of her flower gardens. She's out sitting on her porch reading a book. And as he looks at her, he says to you, do you know her? Do you see her? Do you see her? Do you really know who she is? Do you know her name? Do you know how many children or grandchildren she has? Do you know the cares she carries, the burdens in her mind and heart? Do you know her? You see, if we all begin there, just simply asking the question, do I know my neighbors? And even more basic than that, do I even know their name? Do I know their names? Few things communicate relationship like using someone's name. So again, I just lower the bar really low and I ask you all, this is for all of us. We're all called to love our neighbors. This is not for certain people. This is all of us. So the first step is to get to know them. And that might be a little awkward at first. Maybe you've lived where you are now residing for many years and you've waved at people, you know, as they pull in their driveway. Hey, how are you doing? Beautiful day, isn't it? Oh, yeah. You know, the small talk that we all are good at. And you might actually have to go over there and wait, knock on the door and say, hey, I'm Bob. You wouldn't say that, of course, but you'd say your name and then you would say, you know, I've been here, we've had this small talk, but I really, maybe you told me your name, but I don't remember. My name again is Bob. What is your name? Just like to get to know you a little bit better. And you just cross that threshold and you begin to establish a relationship. Would you do that? You see, if you don't begin there, it's going to be hard to really love them if you don't begin by knowing them and knowing their name. So what I want to do now, after just that summary about the calling on our lives to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, love our neighbor as ourselves, to push past our fear, to overcome the time barriers, and then we get serious about it, then we begin by knowing their names. And I want to shift gears and talk about some practical ways that we can neighbor in the name of Jesus. But as I begin, I want to add again this very important disclaimer, this vital reminder. This is not a program. This is not a checklist. If you do not possess in your heart something moving there to love your neighbor, to love the people near you, then don't do this. Spend time with Jesus like Mary did and ask him to put his love, his heart in you so that you will actually genuinely care, and this will become more a natural expression of that love rather than a project. Because if you do it as a project, they will know, and it will cause more harm than good. And so join me in asking God to give us that heart of love so that this is just more an overflow of our heart rather than a to-do list or some kind of project. We've been blessed by the Lord. He's blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly realms through Jesus Christ. And we're called then to pass on that blessing to others. So I want to talk about five ways we can bless our neighbors. If you're in one of our life groups, one of our small groups, you probably know that this is one of the books that we're going through right now, Bless, Five Everyday Ways to Love Your Neighborhood and Change the World. It's written by Dave Ferguson and John Ferguson, two brothers, pastors in Chicago. And so they use that acronym, BLESS, to lay out five ways that we can bless and love our neighbors. And these are taken from the life and ministry, the actions, the words of Jesus as you study the Gospels. So we're simply following Jesus' example as we do this. So let me just review them, summarize them, and just put this out there for you. This would be a good thing for you to do, perhaps even to get a copy of this book so that you can understand a little more how to do this. So it begins with prayer. B, begin with prayer. You probably know that Jesus began his earthly ministry with prayer. It says in Luke 6, he went out on a mountain and prayed. He began. He often would go and pray, but he began his ministry before he called his disciples. He went and prayed. We believe as a church that prayer is our first work, our primary work. So it's very natural that as we begin to launch out into this endeavor that God is calling us to, we would begin with prayer. So begin, perhaps, and say, God, help me to know how to do this. Show me who I'm to bless. Work in my heart, Lord. Renew me. Give me that same love that is so overwhelming that this woman had for you, so that I'll not be able to avoid sharing it with others. If you already know your neighbors, some of them by name, you begin praying for them. Just pray that God would bless them. Pray that God would give you open doors. So we begin with prayer. Number two, the L stands for listen. Listen. I mentioned a moment ago, one of the ways you can demonstrate respect to another individual and your desire and a relationship with them is to use their name. Another vital thing to do is to listen. Something we're not very good at. We're in conversations, usually we're just simply formulating our next response rather than simply listening to the person and what they're telling us. You know, there are hundreds of questions in the Gospels. Jesus used them sometimes himself. Very rarely did he answer them. There was one individual who was blind, and Jesus said to him, "What would you like me to do for you?" I mean, that's very instructive, isn't it? So often we think we know what other people need. Jesus wanted to listen. What is your need? You tell me. As we listen, we really, truly get to know people. So that's the second part of bless is L, listen. The third is the E, eat. We all like to eat, right? I mean, who doesn't like to eat? We love to eat, and so did Jesus. It's interesting, is it not, that the passage today, Jesus is in someone's home having dinner. The passage we looked at last week, Jesus was in someone's home, Mary and Martha, having dinner. He was not unlike us. Few things advance a relationship beyond acquaintance toward friendship like having a meal together. I believe we all know this from our own experience. There's something about sitting across the table from someone and sharing a meal. So important. We live in a culture today where this is not often done. People are fearful and they've isolated themselves. And yet, if we have this wonderful hospitality where home is just a warm, inviting place, having someone over for something simple, a meal, is such a wonderful way to advance that relationship and truly care for people. Now, there are a million excuses that we give for why we can't do this. Oh, I'm a terrible cook. My home is a wreck. On and on it goes. We have to get past all that and realize none of that really matters. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we relate to people in a way that's loving and we share time with them. Eating together is one way to do that. Begin with prayer, listen, eat together. Number four, letter S, serve. As I mentioned a moment ago, we're good at presuming what people need. We want to run off and serve people and save the world. Sometimes we scratch where people aren't itching. And we serve where service is not welcomed or needed. But as we establish relationships, and we get to know people for who they really are, what they really need, then opportunities for service, perhaps that we never would have thought about ourselves, will emerge and we'll have an opportunity naturally in that context to serve people in very practical ways that they perceive as meaningful and helpful. Again, we're following Jesus' example. He liked to eat with people. But he said, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to what? Serve. Give his life. My friends, that's what we're here for as well. To follow Jesus' example, to represent him, to love people, to serve them. If we can move past the idea they're sinners who need Jesus, yes, that's critical. That's ultimately what they need. But we'll never get to the point of telling them about that if we don't first truly love them. They don't want to hear our message if they don't perceive that we care about them. So the first S in bless is serve. The second S is story. Story. To those who were interested and willing to listen, Jesus would tell his story. One example was Thomas. He said, "Lord, I don't really know what you're talking about. I don't know where you're going. I don't know the way to where you're going." And he was able to say, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." And my friends, I firmly believe that this is the pathway forward. One of the primary pathways of true evangelism in the future is in relational context where we know people, and we've won their trust, they respect us, they know it's a safe relationship. And at that point, we've listened to them, we've respected them, we've not judged them, and then they simply want to know about us. And we have the opportunity to share our story and to share the story of Jesus and how he's changed us. It's not something novel here, or something new. It's basic. You might even say Christianity 101. But if we're never implementing it, there's no point in trying to go beyond it. And so I challenge you to join with me and to be part of this. And to take this very seriously, the Great Commandment. We talk about the Great Commission, go into all the world to make disciples. But he also said, love your neighbor as yourself. We need to take that seriously. And literally, and say, God, move me out beyond my comfort zone to be an expression of your love to the people around me. So press in, get involved. We'll be talking about this as we go forward in the coming weeks and months. If you're not in one of our small groups or life groups, maybe you want to get that book and just use it as a study and a guide. But again, begin with that prayer, and perhaps even begin with the prayer, God, change my heart, so that I truly, genuinely want to do this. Not just I'm feeling guilt if I don't, but I want to do this because you love me, and now I want to express that love to others. So I'm going to repeat this morning words that I began with a couple of weeks ago. I believe they're very fitting. This comes from Elliot Clark, missionary. Said, we need to recognize that the greatest hope for our unbelieving neighbors isn't them coming to us, but God sending us to them. People who would never cross the threshold of a church will walk through your front door. I think that's increasingly true as our culture moves further and further away from our Judeo-Christian foundation. This is increasingly true. They're not going to want to come to a church, but they'll come to a neighbor who's loving and friendly and has hospitality. People who are indifferent to religion or disinclined to Christianity will still appreciate a friendly dinner invitation. I believe that's true. They gladly accept a free meal and in the process may just listen to you rejoice in free forgiveness. You know, God is so good. He's at work today. You know, the news is like all negative. It's like the world is coming to an end. Our culture is falling apart. Guess what? God is on the move. We've rarely, if ever, had such great opportunity in our lifetime to shine for Jesus, to make a difference. And this is one primary way we can do it. Very simply, loving the people he put near us. And as Rosaria Butterfield said, I don't remember the exact quote, But she said, God doesn't get the address wrong. You live where you live by God's appointment. Your neighbors are there by God's appointment. We don't get to pick and choose. We simply obey the Lord in loving them.